Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode. Today's episode is kind of following on a little bit from last week where we talked about creatine and collagen, and I also sprinkled in a little bit about turmeric. Today is just more of a like general overview of supplements in perimenopause, what's worth it, what's not, and why. And hopefully you can walk away feeling a little bit more clear on where you should be putting your focus and where not. Because there's honestly so much aimed at women in midlife right now in terms of supplements, powders, gadgets, various hormone balancing, in inverted commas, because we can't balance hormones in perimenopause. That's kind of the whole point. Various hormone balancing products, and they range from some being genuinely helpful, pretty useless and a complete waste of money, time, energy, and everything in between. So I get why it's so easy to get pulled in by various marketing. Like, there's some really attractive marketing online, Instagram, stuff is just shoved in our face. You know, the algorithm just picks up on one tiny little search for whatever it might be, and B vitamin or a magnesium, and then suddenly you're just bombarded in your feed with adverts for everything. So it's so easy to get pulled in. And when you're tired, when you're feeling foggy and suddenly you can't concentrate or focus as well, or you're not sleeping well, or you're feeling a bit all over the place and just not quite yourself anymore, or you're starting to experience some night sweats or some hot flushes, of course you're going to Google, you're going to scroll Instagram, and you're going to hope that something might just come up that you can just buy and start to take and then hopefully start to feel better. But the problem is, most of these products aren't actually bad. They're just very generic and potentially unhelpful and not worth your time, your money, your energy. And maybe that would be better spent elsewhere. You know, the focus could be better off looking at other things. And a lot of these products, they're often designed as like this all-round hormone support formula that could be fine in theory, you know, when we look at all the ingredients, various really helpful nutrients in there. But because it's a formula and everything's just probably really small amounts of all these amazing things, those smaller levels just might not cut it in perimenopause. So some of those formulas would be better suited to women in their 20s, for example, rather than their 40s. Some use forms that aren't well absorbed, and some contain more fillers and additives than any of the actual nutrients. And some just don't contain enough of anything to make a real difference. So this is where I want to try and cut through this noise for you, because you can just end up spending a lot of money, taking a lot of pills, and just still not feeling any better and being like, you're wondering why. So that's what I want to help you with today, because I see a lot of clients, a lot of friends, a lot of family members will say, oh, I've got this product from this shop, this particular high street shop, that Holland & Barrett, for example, or your regular supermarket or Superdrug. And they'll find, let's say, a formula with vitamin C or some B vitamins. It will say there's a certain number of milligrams of a certain nutrient. But yes, whilst that might technically be contained in that capsule, if that product is not made in a really, you know, quality, well-regulated way where these are delivering it to you is absorbable by you, by your gut, you're not going to actually get that amount. Let's say they say 100 milligrams of vitamin C, you might not get hardly any of that if it's not made in a high quality way. So you do get what you pay for. If something's really cheap, it's because it's been made cheaply and it probably won't be absorbed. And even though it says 100 milligrams or 200 milligrams, you're not likely getting that. And therefore, you're just ending up taking a lot of fillers, a lot of additives than actual nutrients. So I'm going to talk you through the ingredients that you'll see again and again in perimenopause and menopause supplements, the most common things that you're likely to see, and how to tell whether something's likely to be helpful for you or whether it's something you could skip. And the thing with supplements is that they are literally that. They're tools, they're not solutions. They're never going to be the magic solution to a problem. I mean, they are, if you think of things like somebody has a B12 deficiency and then they start supplementing with a good quality B12, then yeah, that's the solution to a deficiency in B12. Same with vitamin D. Someone has low vitamin D levels or low iron levels and they start to supplement with quality vitamin D or iron, that is a solution to that deficiency, but they're not solutions to major kind of problems and imbalances in the body or huge symptoms all of the time, unless those symptoms are directly linked to, like I say, deficiencies in particular nutrients. But they are definitely tools and they can definitely be helpful. I have my own supplement regime and, you know, I work with clients to personalize their own supplement regime, but they can be kept a lot more simpler than you might think or might be led to believe with today's marketing. Because in midlife, the right supplement depends on what your body's actually missing, what it's struggling with, and what it's trying to adapt to. And that can be different for everybody. So the whole supplement thing can start to be more confusing in midlife because your 40s is a perfect storm. We've got shifting hormones, we've got sleep disruption, we've got a higher stress load or decreased resilience to stress. We get mood changes, we get metabolic changes that impact our energy, our weight, body composition, and other things. And most products out there are marketed as hormone support or hormone balancing support. Often these are a blend of lots of different nutrients together, and the doses are often just too low to matter. So you might need a therapeutic dose of one or two nutrients rather than tiny doses of multiple. Okay. So you might see this really attractive looking long list of all these different wonderful nutrients that you've heard about. And you're like, oh yeah, that's got to be great. But actually, what if you just need a higher dose, a therapeutic dose of one or two or even three of these nutrients, but what you're actually getting is a whole load of wonderfully sounding nutrients, but such tiny doses that they won't really touch the sides in terms of what you might need them for. It could also be, like I said, that forms aren't absorbable. That's very common, like I said, in the cheaper, like high street brands and high street shops. You do get what you pay for. Just because it says a certain amount on the label doesn't mean that you're actually going to absorb it if it's not made properly. And formulas are designed for generic women. They're just, you know, hormone balance or hormone support, not for your physiology. What do you need? What is your body missing and struggling with and trying to adapt to? And that's not what these products are aimed at because they don't know you. It's just a generic woman. So the goal of this episode is to help you, my listeners, to sort supplements into buckets. So the foundations, these are the nutrients that most women will benefit from, regardless of symptoms. As you're moving through midlife in terms of supporting their health now, safeguarding it later, this is great supplementary support. And then the second bucket being those symptoms-driven products that could be helpful. And the third bucket is the nice-to-haves, but quite often and overhyped, not necessary to have, not essential. And then the fourth bucket is the proceed with caution bucket. So we'll go through all of this now. So your midlife essentials. So these are the ones where you're going to get the biggest bang for your pound for most women. These are the ones I can confidently say are often worth it if the quality is good and or if testing suggests that there is a need for it. So the first one is vitamin D3 and K2, a vitamin D3 and K2 product. But this would be guided by testing. So this is basically all about getting your vitamin D3 levels into the optimal range. So I always suggest that people test their vitamin D levels twice a year. You can, of course, ask your GP to test your levels, but do ask for a copy of your results. Like, what is the result, rather than just being told, oh, it's all in the normal range. Because what's really important to understand, I've talked about this before, is that we have conventional reference ranges, so standard, e.g. NHS reference ranges, not just NHS, it's just conventional testing generally. And then we have optimal reference ranges. So this is what we use in the functional medicine world. In the conventional medicine world, we're looking at standard reference ranges, and in the functional medicine space, so that would be if you're working with a functional medicine doctor or a functional medicine practitioner or a nutritional therapist like myself, who's trained in functional medicine, in the principles of functional medicine, we are looking at optimal reference ranges, and they can be very different from standard reference ranges. So your regular GP might say your D3's come, your vitamin D's come back and it's normal. You know, your symptoms are definitely nothing to do with vitamin D. When actually, if we look at this result, I have every single client of mine and friend and family member will say, here's the result I got from my GP for my vitamin D. They said it's normal. And it's nowhere near the optimal range. As far as functional medicine is concerned, it's deficient. So again, being told it's normal, go away, you don't need to supplement, you know, your symptoms can't be anything to do with low vitamin D, that's not helpful if that's been the case, that it's just this standard reference range that hasn't looked at the optimal reference ranges. So do test twice a year, do some research into what the optimal reference ranges are for vitamin D. I can tell you that the range that I like to see my clients in is between 150 and 200. And so, yeah, I've got people coming to me saying, oh, I've been told it's normal, it's 56 or it's 60. And it's like, well, it's not, that's not okay. And if you're darker skinned, you have a little sun exposure throughout a year, you know, it's the winter months, you stay indoors a lot, you use sunscreen all the time from the moment you step outside, then you will have a higher need for vitamin D supplementation. So it's really important to understand that. And then why I say K2 as well is because when we're taking a vitamin D3 supplement, ideally we're taking it in liquid form in a lipid base, so some kind of olive oil or a fat base, basically, that helps with absorption, because vitamin D is a fat soluble nutrient, so we absorb it better with a fat base. We also want to pair it with vitamin K. Vitamin K2 is how we make sure that vitamin D is actually getting into the bone. And not just sort of hanging around in our arteries, if you like. So if, for example, you are always taking a good quality multivitamin every day that's got some K2 in it, about 75 to 100 micrograms MCG, then you don't need to get your vitamin D3 with K2. But if you're not using a multivitamin every day, and obviously, so therefore you don't have any K2, then your vitamin D3 product should come with K2 as well. So that's vitamin D. Then the next one is magnesium. So magnesium glycinate is the particular form that I prefer. There's a few different forms. You've got citrate, you've got oxide, which I would avoid. That's not the most absorbable form. In fact, it's the least absorbable form. So again, a clue as to the quality of a product is if it uses magnesium oxide, I would avoid it. Glycinate is a good all-rounder. It's a good calming option, whatever time of day. It doesn't make anybody drowsy or sleepy. It's just calming. It's nice sort of stress regulation form of magnesium. The evidence is mixed in some randomized controlled trials, which is one of the gold standard ways to test. But overall, in studies, a person's magnesium levels correlates with their sleep quality, and some people respond very well. I certainly do. I started taking magnesium glycinate years ago now, and I definitely would not be without it. As soon as that is coming to an end, I'm ordering the next one instantly. And there's not many things that I'd be that on the ball with, but that is definitely one of them. And when I go on holiday, when I go away for the weekend, whenever I go, or even just for one night, I'm always taking my magnesium glycinate with me. And I have about 400 milligrams during the evening, and it just helps me to feel calmer and sleep better. So I would say with magnesium, start low, build up slowly. Many of us do well with even starting at 200 milligrams. And like I said, I take 400. You could start with 200, build up to 3, build up to 4, and just see how you get on. Citrate, the magnesium citrate form, might be the one that some people have issues tolerating, because that's the one that can be helpful if you're constipated, for example. But if we overdo it, it can kind of go the other way. So I just love magnesium glycinate because it's a good all-round form. And then we've got omega-3 or oily fish. So what we're talking about here specifically is EPA and DHA, omega-3 fatty acids, which come from oily fish predominantly. We can get some from algae. We don't get EPA and DHA from things like chia seeds and flaxseed, although some people do think that that's what they're getting. You're getting the omega-3 fatty acids ALA. Which has to be converted in the body through in various processes before it can become usable EPA and DHA in the body. So not many of us are able to efficiently convert the ALA into good levels of EPA and DHA, which is why oily fish is the best source. It's the richest source. We can get some, like I said, from algae, just not in the same sort of high levels that we get from oily fish. So if we're eating, say, 5 to 6 portions of oily fish a week, we should be pretty good in terms of levels. So that would be things like salmon, mackerel, sardines, herring, trout, and so on. But if not, then ideally we would supplement with it as well. So, and that's, I'm saying that for midlife specifically and for women, because there is this concept, a helpful concept to understand, called inflammopause, which is basically where menopause or late, you know, late stages of perimenopause is associated with higher inflammatory signaling in the body. So essentially higher inflammation. And inflammation affects everything, joint aches and pains, sleep issues, stress, brain fog, weight issues, everything. And omega-3s, EPA and DHA can be a useful way to help reduce that inflammation in the body and keep that inflammatory signaling under control. It's very anti-inflammatory. It's been used in studies to look at reducing inflammation in the brain as well. So great for cognition, great for brain fog, great for clarity. And just like I said, you know, body aches and pains can be very helpful with that too. But quality matters. Oxidation, so freshness, heavy metals, all of these things are things to consider when we're looking at where this has been made, which particular brands we're using. So brands like, Biocare is a good brand to look for. Nordic Naturals, which other ones do I like? Pure Encapsulations. So those are the ones that this Wiley's fish oil. Those I'd say would probably be my four favorite brands. There might be some other good ones as well. Nordic Naturals is very good. So definitely one to look out for. And these are, you know, we can trust these brands. They are sourcing the best quality, low in heavy metal fish, smaller fish. You know, there'll be no oxidation. These will be really fresh, good quality products that's worth your time and money. And then it will be about a good quality multivitamin. This isn't necessary for everybody. And for some of us, it's just more necessary in specific cases, specific seasons. So for example, if I or a client or, you know, is highly stressed, they're on the go, and I know that their body is just burning through all these different micronutrients every single day. And even though they have a good quality diet now and they're working on their foundations in terms of sleep, and their stress, we might just say, look, it's good to just have this backup of this good quality multivitamin to cover all your bases. That would also include a very good amount of all the different B vitamins. So it'd be like, you might have heard of B complex. A B complex is all the different B vitamins. If you get a good quality multivitamin, you'll also have the B complex, you know, all the different B vitamins in there as well in good amounts. So that's really helpful in terms of high stress. If someone's recently been ill, they're getting over a flu, a cold, a virus, COVID, whatever it might be, or they've just had an operation, they've been in hospital, it'd be great to have that extra support for a good sort of 3 to 6 months to just help them out. If somebody has a low appetite, so they're just not able to eat as much as they should be eating, low diet variety, definitely if you're vegan, even vegetarian, I would say, you know, you definitely want to be taking supplement with a good quality multivitamin. Anyone with digestive issues, because they might not be able to break down and absorb B vitamins, for example, and other nutrients. If somebody has very heavy periods, they might be looking to make sure they've got a good quality multi with a good source of iron in there as well. So it's obviously not a replacement for food, but very helpful in these cases. And for example, what I do now is I have a good quality multivitamin and I just take it every other day. So I have a B complex that I take every day. And then I have a good quality multi that doesn't contain any B vitamins, and I have it every other day or so. And if it runs out, I don't stress about ordering it straight away. I'll just get it when I can, and then again, start taking it every other day, because I know I have a well-rounded diet, I'm eating all the things, and I'm not in a sort of, you know, recovery phase from illness or high stress phase. But when or I am, then I would up that to every day for a while. So the other nuance here is that some people with, for example, ADHD traits or ADHD diagnosis, if you have histamine issues, if you have any sort of mood sensitivity or PMDD, then you may feel worse on what's known as methylated forms of B vitamins. So you may have heard of methylated B vitamins, methyl folate, methyl B12. These are the most active forms, usable forms of B vitamins. But for these people, like I said, ADHD, histamine, mood sensitivity, PMDD, it's important if you're going to try methylated B vitamins that you start very low, very slowly. And you build up and just see what your tolerance is for these particular forms of B vitamins. Although they're the best forms, they don't work well. My favourite brand, I would say, for B vitamins would be BioCare. They do methylated and they also do non-methylated complexes. And then, as I said, vegan, you would definitely want to be supplementing specifically with B12. So you may not get enough B12 in a quality multi because it might be a lower level just to kind of top things up. But if you're vegan, you're looking for more than just topping up your B12, and also iron, particularly in the heme iron form, which basically comes from animal foods. You need to more than just top those levels up. You actually need to get way more in. So you may consider a multi plus a separate B12 and a separate iron. But again, you can be guided by testing. Look at your ferritin level, look at your B12 level, and see if you're in the optimal versus standard conventional reference range for those. Also, like I said, if you are menstruating very heavily, then iron could be helpful. I don't menstruate super, super heavy, but I actually choose to take a heme iron supplement. Although I have plenty of heme iron rich foods in my diet, I take for sort of 5 to 10 days a month whilst I'm on my period and just after, I take just a small dose of heme iron every day, just to, you know, make sure I'm not losing. But my ferritin levels aren't going down every month when I have my period. And if you're very heavy, you definitely, or longer, you know, bleeding for longer each month, you definitely want to consider that. But if you're not eating oily fish, you definitely want to be supplementing with the algae form of omega-3 if you're vegan. And then maybe selenium as well could be needed. And then the second bucket is the more targeted support supplements, which would be more symptoms led. So these are the, if this is your pattern at the moment, consider these tools. So for example, if you know that you have blood sugar dysregulation or insulin sensitivity, or you're, you know, worried that that's potentially what's going on for you from various symptoms, for example, blood sugar swings, so dysregulations in blood sugar, highs and lows, and just finding it, your body finding it difficult to keep it regulated, will worsen our mood, it will worsen sleep, hot flushes, night sweats, cravings. We might feel really hungry even though we've just eaten. We might feel very sleepy once we've just eaten. We may not be able to go more than 3 to 4 hours without eating because we get extremely hungry and irritable at the same time. These can be signs that we're having blood sugar issues or insulin sensitivity issues, or storing fat around the middle specifically. Just generally feeling worse, brain fog as well. So in this case, we might be looking at nutrients like chromium, cinnamon extract, alpha-lipoic acid or ALA, and or myo-inositol. Myo-inositol can be very helpful in this case. There's evidence studies in postmenopausal women with metabolic syndrome. So these are metabolic, where they've used 2,000 milligrams twice a day in powder form usually. That's been shown to improve insulin resistance, reverse insulin resistance, and improve their metabolic markers. So that'd be things like HbA1c, fasting glucose, cholesterol markers, and lipid markers. It could be 2 grams in the morning, just in some water first thing, and then 2 grams before bed. It's actually really nice to take 2 grams of myo-inositol, or even 1 gram, before bed. That's been shown to support a better night's sleep, because if we do have any blood sugar dysregulation issues in the night, they're going to wake us up. You know, these blood sugar lows are going to wake us up 1, 2, 3 a.m. and we have trouble getting back to sleep because it's a stressor. Blood sugar lows is going to increase the stress hormone cortisol. So we might struggle to get back to sleep. So taking myo-inositol at night, particularly in midlife, because our metabolic health changes, our blood sugar regulation, our insulin sensitivity, all changes from 40 plus. So even though we may think, well, I've never had issues with this, things shift as we move through our 40s. So myo-inositol, 2 grams before bed. If you also feel that you've got, even if you've been diagnosed with PCOS, for example, then having 2 grams in the morning as well can be really helpful. Then we've got something known as akkermansia. So this is basically a particular gut bacteria. And there's some really interesting emerging research here where some studies suggest that this akkermansia, this particular bacteria, can influence our GLP-1 pathways naturally. But also in some of the research, the human supplement outcomes can vary by the strain, the formulation of, you know, the particular brand as well, and a person's baseline metabolic health. So it depends how effective it will be, can sort of depend what stage you're coming at. But, you know, it's promising. It's definitely not essential. But if you're really worried about, for example, obesity, insulin resistance, and you're struggling with that, then it could be something to consider using Akkermansia. I would suggest, because it's a gut bacteria, what we need in our gut is diversity of different strains of bacteria. That's the most protective gut environment that we can possibly have. So if you're going to take a particular just sort of single strain of bacteria, that's fine. But I would also be taking it with a general probiotic that contains a whole load of different strains as well. So you're not just getting that one strain going in. And of course, pairing it with plenty of fiber, plenty of resistant starch type fibers, you know, starchy carbohydrates, oats, plenty of colorful vegetables and things throughout the days and weeks as well. That's, you know, and protein, resistance training, good sleep, all of these things will be important as well. No, like I said, no supplement is going to be a magic bullet on its own. So the next sort of area where symptoms could be leading what you might be looking for in terms of a nutrient is the sort of sleep nervous system support area. So my absolute favorites to support sleep, to support nervous system regulation, which supports sleep, but also supports our mood generally, supports how we move through our days generally in terms of how we deal with things and how we deal with stressors, are glycine, magnesium, and taurine. These are my favorite three. So glycine has been shown in studies that 3 grams or 3,000 milligrams before bed, so in sort of the hour leading up to bed, has been shown to improve sleep quality and then the alertness that we experience the next day, you know, how cognition as well. It's a lovely add-on when stress is high, when we're just really dealing with a lot. Sleep feels light, doesn't feel restorative, or the mind just won't switch off. I absolutely love glycine for this. I've actually been taking personally 3 grams of glycine before bed with my magnesium glycinate, which I've already covered. I take about 400 milligrams of magnesium glycinate. I take these two before bed. I've been doing it for a few years now. And honestly, I definitely noticed a difference. My glycine ran out recently and I definitely noticed that my sleep has been lighter. And then I bought, you know, the next one came in the post and I've started taking it again. And I feel like my sleep is back to that sort of deeper restorative state. The other one is taurine. So taurine is a calming neurotransmitter that's similar in structure to GABA and glycine. So these are the brain's other two calming neurotransmitter, which is why glycine works to calm the brain and support deep sleep. And by interacting with the GABA receptors in our brain, taurine helps to support this, what's known as GABAergic tone, or overall GABA activity in the brain. And therefore it can improve sleep, prevent migraines, relieve perimenopausal mood symptoms. I'm really supportive, especially in the luteal phase. So just before kind of week or two before our period, particularly in perimenopause, it can be very, very helpful. So I think if you were going to go for anything, I'd say the glycine. It's relatively inexpensive. Even brands like Now Foods, they do a glycine powder. Just take 3 grams before bed. It's about 3/4 of a teaspoon is 3 grams of this powder, and it lasts months once you've bought it. And then with your 300 milligrams of a magnesium glycinate, there's lots of different brands that do glycinate nowadays. Again, I love pure encapsulations. You've got Metagenics. There's loads more now. If you just search magnesium glycinate, you'll see lots of different brands. And then if you want to go that little step extra and add taurine, or maybe you would just, you know, to save money, you might just add the taurine in, like I said, the luteal phase, if you're still having cycles, or just when you really feel you need that extra support. But it is a really great one to use because taurine also promotes estrogen detoxification. So how we clear and process estrogen, or use estrogen out of the body, whether it's our own estrogen and or hormone therapy estrogen. So I've started to add taurine in now as well. I find it really beneficial. And it also supports mitochondrial function, which is the little parts of our cells that make energy. It's anti-inflammatory. It reduces oxidative stress to our body cells, so great for healthy aging. It's also been shown to improve insulin sensitivity, which is another thing that starts to be more common as we move through our 40s. We're more likely to have insulin resistant cells. What we want is insulin sensitive cells. So taurine can be helpful for that. It's also been shown to help keep healthy LDL cholesterol levels and total cholesterol, reduces bone mineral density loss. So it's a great all-rounder to have. And in terms of dose, it would be 2 to 4 grams. So again, 2000 or 4000 milligrams a day, divided in 2 doses. I personally just have 2 grams a day, and I have it at night with my glycine and my magnesium. And then we have inflammation could be an area where people need support. So this would be, you know, joint aches and pains, muscle aches and pains, headaches, migraines, awful PMS, very heavy periods, brain fog. All of these things could suggest that there's some inflammatory processes going on. And this is where curcumin, turmeric, so curcumin is the active component of turmeric root. This is where this comes in. So I talked about this in last week's episode in a bit more detail, but, you know, you could just start to increase turmeric in the diet. So buying every week, or, you know, buy fresh turmeric root, grate some at, you know, skin it, peel it, and then grate it onto your foods. I just grated some this morning, for example, onto my, what did I have this morning? I had an omelette with smoked salmon and feta cheese, and I just scraped some on there. You can just put it on top of your stir fries, put it in smoothies, whatever you're eating, just put it into your salads. So up it in the diet. And if you want to supplement with curcumin, if you think you might need more therapeutic doses based on your particular symptoms. And again, when I'm working with clients one-on-one, I know whether someone would really benefit from putting their money into a curcumin supplement versus when I just think, no, if you know, unless you have a huge budget, we just don't necessarily need this right now. But if you do think you're someone who does need it, then always be looking out for Mareva or the BCM95 with piperine. This is what you'd want to be looking at on labels or Google if you're Googling products. But again, it's not a replacement for an anti-inflammatory diet and lifestyle. It's just going to be helpful if someone really needs that additional anti-inflammatory support. So we've looked at the first bucket being the products, nutrients that would be helpful for most women, regardless of symptoms as they move through midlife. The second bucket being the ones that would be more symptoms led. You may need more of this if, you know, experiencing certain symptoms. And then the third bucket is the herbal hormone support. So this is where there's a lot of hype online. So we've got what's known as natural SERMs. So this SERMs stands for selective estrogen receptor modulators. We have medications that are SERMs, but I'm talking about natural selective estrogen receptor modulators. These are plant-derived compounds, primarily phytoestrogen. So that's the other word that you've probably heard of a lot. And phytoestrogen examples would be isoflavones, also known as genistein, daidzein, and these are found in soybeans. So this would be the edamame bean. It would be good quality tofu or tempeh. We're not talking about processed soy here, like soy yogurt, soy milk. We're talking about real whole form soy. So these SERMs or phytoestrogen, they don't increase your estrogen or lower it. They just have a weak estrogen-like effect in some tissues. So this is not the same as hormone therapy or instead of, you know, I hear a lot of people say, I use phytoestrogens. I don't want to take hormone therapy. I'm going to use phytoestrogens instead. It's not the same thing. That being said, if somebody doesn't want to take hormone therapy or use it, that's fine. But it's just to be aware that it's not the same thing. The only thing that can increase or lower our estrogen is essentially estrogen itself. But of course, if we're talking about cancer care, if somebody may be on medication, which is all about blocking estrogen, that's a completely different thing. I'm talking about the phytoestrogen supplements that we may see out there, soybeans, isoflavones. So they have this weak estrogen-like effect in some tissues, and it can therefore help some women with symptoms like hot flushes, night sweats. So what you might see in this bucket would be black cohosh, sage, and red clover. So there is mixed evidence about black cohosh, but there is a lot of reviews showing a benefit for vasomotor symptoms. So that's your hot flush night sweats in some women. So it could be worth trying, again, alongside good diet and lifestyle habits, you know, supporting nervous system, because stress, cortisol, nervous system dysregulation are huge drivers of hot flashes and night sweats. So we want to be working on those foundational pieces as well. But maybe whilst you're working on those things, you could try some black cohosh for a few months and see if that supports as well. But safety and medication interactions really do matter here. So make sure if you're on any medications at all, that you're making sure that there's no interactions, negative interactions between your medication and black cohosh or any other herb that you might be taking. So particularly, for example, if somebody's on tamoxifen for whatever reason, for example, women with breast cancer history could be using tamoxifen longer term. This is where, you know, you really want to be careful with things like this, but personalized guidance really matters here. So as I said, sage and red clover might also be other herbs that you see. These are included in certain menopause formulas, perimenopause formulas as well. Red clover contains phytoestrogens. So these are the, like I said, the plant compounds that act a bit like very weak estrogen in the body. So they can sort of help modulate various symptoms related to low estrogen more so. So yeah, similar to black cohosh, it doesn't increase your estrogen levels, but it can just help with those, just to bring more comfort when it comes to the fluctuating nature of estrogen in perimenopause, those sharp drops that we get as part of the roller coaster and then its eventual decline at menopause. Red clover, black cohosh can maybe help alleviate those hot flushes and night sweats. But like I say, it really is more important that we're working on the foundational lifestyle habits than looking to these sorts of things as the magic bullet. Sage is slightly different. It doesn't act like estrogen in the same way as red clover and black cohosh, but it's traditionally been used for excessive sweating and hot flushes. There's some evidence that sage extracts can help reduce the frequency and intensity of hot flushes, especially in menopause. And some women find it surprisingly very helpful. But the important thing to know with all of these, black cohosh, red clover, sage, is that they're not, like I said, hormone therapy, hormone replacements. They're symptom support tools. They can take the edge off for some women, but they won't address the bigger drivers, as I said, like blood sugar swings, poor sleep, chronic stress, or low protein intake, for example, or really overdoing it in the gym, or overdoing it, pounding the pavements, running so many times a week, or going to these long HIIT classes, or, you know, really intense workouts. They're the big drivers for these sorts of symptoms as well. And because these herbs are biologically active, they're not automatically gentle or right for everybody. You know, essentially these are biologically active things. This is where that personal history, symptoms, medications, and that sort of personal professional guidance can really matter. So if anybody, you know, if you're listening to this and you think, I just want that personalized guidance with regards to supplements and what I do or don't need, then of course working with me one-to-one would be great. So you can contact me via the show notes or Instagram or my website, drop me an email and we can explore that. Even my power hour. So I've got a power hour. It's the 60-minute call where we sit and talk together on video about what you're trying to achieve, what you've done so far. And we just kind of map out where you could be focusing. But if you really want that personalized supplement protocol, then you'd want to work with me in the 3-month package or the health roadmap option. You'll see all of that on the website or in the show notes. So the final bucket is adaptogenic herbs and nutrients to support stress. So adaptogenic basically means plants and some mushrooms as well that can help your nervous system to respond to physical and mental stressors and support anxiety, fatigue, and your overall sense of well-being. So you may have heard of some popular ones like ashwagandha, rhodiola, holy basil. There's loads, but you've got ashwagandha, which is the sort of calming. Rhodiola is also like mood stabilizing, calming, but it's also a little bit energizing. You've got the holy basil, also known as Tulsi, which is quite gentle, supports anxiety. There's also Schisandra, Siberian ginseng, Panax ginseng, reishi mushroom, lion's mane. Reishi is probably the most more sort of adaptogen stress one. Also immune regulating. And then we've got lovely nutrients that are calming and help to just bring down that stress response. Lovely to use in the evening. Passion flower, lemon balm, valerian, Romania. These are really soothing sleep support herbs. I like to use lemon balm. Sometimes I'll just take lemon balm at four in the afternoon if I'm having a particularly stressful day. It could just help me move into the afternoon, into the evening, a little bit calmer. And then some essential nutrients for supporting that HPA axis, so nervous system support, supporting the brain to adrenal communication, which is essentially governing your stress response. That would be vitamin C, really, really important for adrenal health. We tend to burn through our vitamin C stores when we're stressed or not sleeping well. And then you've got magnesium, which we've covered already. The glycinate form is definitely my preferred for this. B vitamins, particularly B6 in the P5P form. We tend to burn through all our B vitamins, but specifically B6, and we just don't want to be low in B6. It's crucial for energy, for mood, for PMS, reducing PMS. And then zinc supports immunity and stress recovery, and L-theanine. So this, I love L-theanine. This is another really calming, what's actually an amino acid rather than a nutrient. We find this in the ECGC part of green tea. But if you want it in more sort of therapeutic forms, again, this is something I would take maybe 200 milligrams of in the evening. It can be really lovely. And you might find it in a sleep support formula with things like passion flower and lemon balm, maybe, and ashwagandha. The final bucket, I said that was the final bucket, but this is the final bucket, and then we're ready to wrap up. This is where we really need to be careful. So you may have heard of DIM. I've done a separate episode on DIM and sulforaphane and how to caution with that, and how sulforaphane is the preferred option. And particularly this would be if you might have read about DIM or sulforaphane in terms of supporting how we break down and clear out our estrogen, particularly how we metabolize estrogen down various pathways. This becomes very clear if somebody, for example, does a Dutch test. So I do Dutch testing with my clients. I have a Dutch testing package, and there's a metabolism portion of this test where it evaluates your urine, four samples taken over 24 hours. And it's looking at how your body is breaking down your used estrogen and which pathways it's going down, basically, is the easiest way to describe it for the sake of today without going into too much detail. And if a person is not breaking down their estrogen via the most favorable protective pathways, some practitioners would use DIM to support that, to improve that. But what DIM can also do is actually clear out quickly the levels of estrogen in our body. And we don't really want to be doing that unless we know for a fact we have excess levels of estrogen and we really want to bring that down. You might use DIM very temporarily, maybe 3 months at the most, just to help clear out that excess estrogen whilst also working on the foundational lifestyle pieces to support the body, including gut health, particularly to support how the body breaks down its estrogen. But you definitely don't want to be using DIM on a long-term basis. I have clients that come to me and say, I've been taking DIM, you know, for years because somebody told me to take it 5 years ago for healthy estrogen. And I've just been taking it ever since. And we find when we do test with them that they have very low estrogen levels. And in perimenopause, we do not want to be playing around with, you know, further reducing estrogen when it's either on this mad roller coaster and then declining in late perimenopause. Even if we're in the earlier perimenopause phases, when we still have very, very robust, if not higher than ever, levels of estrogen, we still just want to be very careful with trying to manipulate those levels with something like DIM. So definitely caution with that. If you want to ask me any questions on that, please do just drop me a message on either Instagram or email. Links are in the show notes. So here's just a very simple filter that I'll leave you with. If you can do your research, your due diligence on the particular brands that you would like to use, a simple filter is you want to know, is that particular brand, does it use third-party testing? Because this isn't particularly, you know, supplements aren't regulated. Doesn't mean that they're bad and that we shouldn't use them. It just means they're not regulated. So ideally, you want a brand who opts for third-party testing. They don't have to do it, but if they opt for it, we know that they're already a more trusted brand because they're so confident in the quality of their supplement that they're happy for it to be third-party tested. Because this third party shouldn't be biased. They're a third party that will quite happily say, this is rubbish, this isn't good enough. So you have to, you know, if you're a good quality lab brand, then you'll be happy to have it third-party tested. So you want to check that it's third-party tested. Are the forms they use bioavailable? Are they forms that are usable in the body? So for example, like I mentioned earlier, magnesium oxide versus magnesium glycinate. Oxide is not very well absorbed. So if a brand uses oxide, I wouldn't use them. Are doses meaningful? So we want to be avoiding like pixie dust blends. There are so many amazing looking blends out there for perimenopause and menopause. When I look at this long list of wonderful nutrients, many of which I've talked about, but there's like 10 milligrams of each. This is just a pixie dusting of some really great nutrients. And you, in perimenopause, it won't cut it. You probably need two or three of those nutrients in more therapeutic doses. So that's another thing to look out for. Does it match your goal? What are you trying to solve? Is it sleep issues? Is it hot flushes? Is it blood sugar controls? Insulin resistance? So what are you actually, you know, is it matching? Are the nutrients in there matching your goal? Are you also looking at nutrient deficiencies and making sure that those are being covered? If, you know, B12, vitamin D, iron. Are you on any medications? Do you have breast cancer history or other cancer history, liver issues? You know, is your body, is your liver able to deal with all of these supplements? Are you in a good place? Are you having good bowel, regular bowel movements every day with a good healthy microbiome? Because all of that is part of your liver detoxification as well. Are you taking any thyroid meds? Check interactions, check online, check with your GP. If you're working with me, that's what I check for all of my clients as well, to make sure it's always safe to be taking any supplements that they're taking. I saw a post on Instagram the other day by quite a well-known influencer, and it was so annoying. She's not, I mean, she's an influencer in the financial space, business space, and she just listed off, she said, everyone wants to know what supplements I take, so here you go, guys. And she listed off the longest list of random supplements I've ever heard. And of course, everyone in the comments, oh yeah, I'm going to get that. Oh, I'm going to, because she looks amazing. But we don't know that she looks, she probably doesn't, she doesn't look amazing because of those supplements. She just looks amazing. She does look, she's, you know, she looks great. And they were just so random and unnecessary. And all I thought when she listed them off was, how is your liver dealing with all of those? And what do you need that for? What do you need that for? What do you need that for? You know, maybe she has, she didn't say she was working with anybody one-to-one. She just said, these are what she's heard, these are good, so she takes this. And of course, she's got so much money that she can just go out and take whatever the next best supplement that's out there. So, or that's marketed to be the next best supplement. So do be careful. The best supplement plan is the one that matches your body, your symptoms, your lab results, and your lifestyle and your needs. Focus on the foundations first. Diet, you know, blood sugar balancing, eating plenty of protein, fiber, oily fish, and your sleep, managing stress, making sure you have good gut health, regular bowel movements every day, and then add this targeted support on if necessary. And if you're unsure, don't guess. And again, if you would like to work with me on a one-to-one basis to go through any of this stuff, then the link to exploring that is in the show notes. Any questions or anything you'd like me to address on future episodes regarding supplements or anything else, drop me a message. I would love to hear from you. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time. If you enjoyed this episode, come and join me inside the Midlife Thrive membership. It's where I share my best resources, deeper education and coaching support to help you navigate perimenopause and beyond with clarity and confidence. Head to francescaliparotti.com/midlife-thrive-membership or check the link in the show notes, and I'll look forward to welcoming you into the community.